This is the Better Reading Podcast platform with stories behind the story, Jane's Be Better podcast, My Book Chat with Caroline Overington, and more. Looking for a particular podcast? Remember, you can always skip to it.
Welcome to the Better Reading Podcast, Stories Behind the Story, brought to you by Belinda Audio. Listen to Belinda audiobooks anywhere, everywhere.
Hi, this is Cheryl Arkell from the Better Reading Podcast, Stories Behind the Story. We talk to authors about how they came to tell us their story. Sarah Bailey, welcome to Better Reading.
Thank you very much for having me.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm really looking forward to this conversation. Sarah is an example of how there's always time to write that novel if you really want to. She's a mum to three sons and is currently the managing director of the Melbourne and Sydney offices of an advertising agency. Her internationally award-winning Gemma Woodstock series includes The Dark Lake, which won the Ned Kelly Award for the Best First Fiction, and the Davitt Award for Best Debut, followed by Into the Night and Where the Dead Go. Her latest book, which she's here to talk to us about today, is called Body of Lies, and it's the fourth in this series. I don't want to sound sexist because we're not that at Better Reading, but there is a whole body of work that goes into raising children, both men and women, but we all know that women bear the brunt of it usually, particularly when they're really little. And you've got a full-time job and you're a writer.
Yes.
Please explain.
Well, I think, you won't be surprised to know that I do get asked that question quite a lot. And, I mean, I do have to say that I've certainly not raised my children alone. That is definitely not something that I can claim. I've had lots of support, both partners but also my family, which helps enormously because I am pretty good at multitasking, but if there's one thing that you definitely can't do at the same time is write a book and do something else, it is a fairly focused activity. So time has definitely become something that I'm constantly trying to negotiate. I haven't ever written a book with a small baby before because when I first wrote my other books, my elder children were a little bit older. I was sort of, I think, 8 and 5 or around that age. So I feel like the next 12 months might be a particular challenge, and I'll have to sort of see how that goes.
All children are different. Yeah, and all kids are different.
Yeah.
Some want you there all the time and some don't and whatever.
That's right. And the sleeping thing too, you know, like I think I really feel for people that are up sort of, you know, every couple of hours because that really makes your quality time during the day pretty challenging. So touch wood, we've been relatively lucky with this one so far, but we'll see.
And also you touched on family and it takes a village. And it's so true. You know, I mean, I've often helped my nieces and nephews and one niece that lives particularly close to me many, many years ago, I think it was like 14 years ago, I said to her, you know, she had one at the time, I'll take him on a Monday. I'll pick him up from preschool and just to help her out and I'll keep him here until you come and get him. Like, so it was dinner and, you know, all that sort of stuff. And, you know, I thought I'd do it for as long as it lasted. Well, it lasted 14 years. Now he doesn't want to be anywhere near me. But then that came another one. And then I've had him now for 11 years. And I feel that she often thanks me for that. But really, I need to be thanking her because it's the biggest privilege of all.
No, it's so lovely. I hear you talk about your nieces and nephews and I do think that it's really nice for children to have relationships with people beyond their parents. I think the benefits for both, you know, parties are so important. I know there's been lots of experiments done as well with, you know, small children next to aged care homes and teenagers, you know, looking sort of to connect with the elderly in various environments. And I really think that's the future for the society. I think it's a really important dynamic to introduce, to have different people caring and interacting with different generations. So, I think it's lovely having that kind of connection.
Well, this is really, really off topic, but I'm going to talk about it because I heard it yesterday. I was listening to some podcasts and they were talking about think it was from the book Sapien. Look, I'm not sure. But anyway, they were talking about why it is that humans have survived over the millennia versus other animals. And this person said, and you might have heard about this, it's the grandmother effect. Have you heard about that? Where
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, look it up, because the theory to me was a light bulb moment. So because humans, so in the past you had to be hunters and gatherers, and you do now, right? Like, you know, working yeah. mothers and fathers. And who looks after the children, right? Yeah. And so because humans, grandparents stepped in and looked after the baby humans, that had an effect on the life cycle of humans.
Definitely, yeah.
You know, I love that so much.
It makes so much sense. I think, I'm really passionate about it, actually, in terms yeah. of just making sure that, you know, not everyone wants to work or has a sort of sure. passion, craft calling. But I think if you do, it's really important that you have the ability to share, you know, the sort of labor of childcare, because mm-hmm. you know, we want women, mothers, fathers, anyone. We want people contributing to, you know, the workforce. And I certainly want mothers and parents in the workforce contributing mm-hmm. in that way as well. We don't want them just at home with their kids. I think that limits everybody. Mm-hmm. So I think...
Including
the children. I think that's
yeah.
right.
So, yeah, yeah.
You know, it does take sort of a village, and the village might be patched together with a whole lot of different paid and unpaid and relationship-oriented mm-hmm. sort of care. But I do think that the benefit for society is that you get people contributing and enriched and engaged and fulfilled, and that's only going to be good for the kids as well. So, yeah, I think it's something that's yeah, very important.
I'll tell you one last story because it's cute and, again, completely yeah. unrelated, and then we'll move on and talk about writing. The 11-year-old, right, the 11-year-old, yeah. I was home last Sunday and he sent me a text and he said, I'm in the park, right, which is right next to me. I assumed he was in the park with his mother, my niece. Great, I'll come yes. down. Yep, I'll yeah. see you in a second. It's literally next door. I get down there, Sarah, and he's there with another 11-year-old. It's just the two of them.
Right?
Exactly.
And he called and he wanted you to come. Oh, wow, that's nice.
I said, oh, hi. I was so surprised. Oh, hi. And he said, you know, I thought maybe you could go for a walk with us.
Oh, that's really sweet. Well, but you're obviously doing something right, because my kid ignores me if I'm asking where he is half the time.
But he might not ignore a grandmother or a great aunt.
Probably not, actually. I think
and that's the value.
A different relationship. That's right. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's so important.
Sweet.
Anyway. The last thing I wanted to do was walk around the park with two 11-year-olds, but I did it.
Once you've been invited, it's a bit hard to reject the invite.
Absolutely, yeah. absolutely. And the fact that they chose me, you know, whoa.
Yeah.
Okay, I want to know, because I don't know if we've spoken about this, I want to know how you came to writing. Like, you know, at what point did your career veer off to writing? Mm-hmm. Because you're working, are you still managing director? Yeah.
Yeah, I had a baby last year and in May 2023. So I'm just about to go back to full time work in
yeah, wow.
the next couple of weeks, which will be I am really looking forward to it, although it is also a bit daunting. So I have had the last sort of 11 months off work, and I have finished my book in that time. So Body of Lies came out in Feb. But yeah, I'm going back to the juggle. So yeah,
and also working in an advertising agency, that's not a sleepy job.
It's not a sleepy job. It's definitely go go go, which I really like. And I think probably luckily my role in advertising is in management and sort of partnership with clients and strategy and commercial management. So not actually writing, apart from the writing that we do incidentally in those roles. So it is quite a different part of my brain, I think, I use for both. Mm. And I really look forward to having time to write now, perhaps more than ever before, because it does feel sort of like a brain break, I think. It's a totally different kind of imagination-oriented endeavour. So I really kind of value that time. But in terms of my writing journey, I guess I sort of probably started being really passionate about reading and writing, and always really wanted to sort of work in a field that, you know, allowed that to be part of my job. I wanted to be a journalist, so that was sort of what I ended up studying at university, but I had a mixed degree with marketing. And really, it just sort of turned out that I applied for sort of roles. I did some experience in journalism, in print, and also in TV. Really enjoyed both, but then just got a job in a marketing advertising agency and loved it. Just found my people, found my sort of mode of work, and was there for 14 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so loved it. Loved the agency, loved the culture, loved the team. Progressed sort of through the ranks and felt very motivated and ambitious in that industry. I think, like, I know I've heard you talk to a lot of other people, did stop and have that sort of forced break with parental leave. And I think there's something about stopping, looking around, being outside during the day, not in that kind of racy mode, that made me really sort of reconnect with my passion for writing. So I started writing some blog posts. It was the era of the blog, sort of around 2010-11. So that was pretty easy, I guess, to find quick ways to get published, and I found that really satisfying. And
what were your blogs about? What were you writing about at that time?
Oh, don't look them up, but no. Just they were kind of varied, like some parenting kind of pieces, some just observations on culture and politics. And I got really, I think being on leave made me reconnect with the world in a way that didn't feel sort of as superficial as perhaps it had been. So I got really back into politics, really back into sort of just consuming content at like an alarming rate, really. So I didn't sort of see parental leave as a break. It was more like a different mode of kind of connecting with the world. And, yeah, really got back into writing. And so even once I returned to work, I sort of, I think the spark had been lit again. And I couldn't get the thought off my mind. And so for the next couple of years, I just kept thinking, I want to write a book. I want to give it a go. So I sort of set myself a bit of a private goal. It wasn't really a publicly sort of declared pledge, but I sort of decided I really wanted to try to write a book before I turned 35.
Before you got old.
Well, it just felt like 40 seemed too far away to be sort of like motivating. So I was like 35. I think I was 33. I thought 2 years, I should be able to do it. And then The Dark Lake was published one day after my 35th birthday, which was really, it was amazing.
So were you working? You weren't you were being working at
home. I was working. No, I had taken parental leave. I'd returned. I had started writing the book. And then what I actually ended up doing was I got about 50,000 words into this draft of The Dark Lake, or what would become the Dark Lake. And then I ended up resigning from my job and taking long service leave because I had been there for so long. So I had sort of 7 weeks. Mm-hmm. And in that 7 weeks, I finished the draft. That was sort of my deal with myself. Wow. But then I started pitching it to agents and I didn't know anything about the publishing industry. So I sort of was, Googling agents in Australia and trying to work out how to submit the manuscript. And during that time, I was doing some contract work and some 3 days a week part-time roles in advertising agencies, and then I ended up going back full-time. But during that period, I did manage to have an agent sign me on, and she worked with me to review the manuscript because I thought it was finished, but it was not, and then presented it to publishers, and Allen and Unwin picked me up at that point. I was really lucky.
So when you were writing that first book, The Dark Lake, how aware were you of genre, and how aware were you that you were writing into a genre, or was it that you were just writing the story that you wanted to write?
It was absolutely the latter. I would say my knowledge of genre was sort of close to zero, probably just because I had never thought about it. I think, I would like to think that I understood that there was different types of books, but I just was writing this story and gave literally zero thought to the type of book it was. It really wasn't until I went to submit the manuscript and I was following the agent's instructions, really specifically, because I'd heard that if you, put a foot wrong, they can sort of just reject you wholesale. And it had a question around, tell us what type of book genre you feel your book would be categorized in. And I thought, I've never really thought about this. And I was kind of like murder mystery. And then when I was speaking to the agent, once she contacted me, she said, no, it's definitely, psychological crime thriller. And I said, oh, okay. I sort of didn't even realize that there was all these different subcategories of crime and whatnot. So, I've since become quite au fait with how important that wayfinding is for publishers, booksellers, and consumers, but I was just writing the story that came into my mind, and I knew that there was a crime in it, but I still didn't really click that sort of meant that I was suddenly trying to be a crime author.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
I've got a question about, so you studied journalism, and were you writing copy at the agency? Was copy your thing, or were you, no?
Never, no. Oh. So I never went into a creative role. Kind of by accident. I just applied for roles and became an account, what we call an account executive, which is, you know, the relationship and money and strategy people. Yeah.
Okay. So then when you sat down to write a novel, what tools did you have?
None really. Like I'm very passionate and I think drawn to story. I mean, I think we all are. Like I think human nature draws us to stories, and even people that aren't necessarily sort of into books and reading, I think everyone loves a story. You know, gossip is the fuel of the world and has kind of kept us going to this point. I'm particularly interested in story and structure and character arcs. And I think when I look back, even as a kid, I would sort of finish a book and really think about why it moved me so much, or what journey the character went on and why that was sort of so important to me to sort of analyze. So I think it's always been like a particular interest of mine. But I sat down to write this book and, yeah, I had no idea how to write a book. I did do one short course as part of my kind of pledge to myself to really sort of lean into writing and try to write a book. I did sort of a weekend course with the Australian Writers' Centre, and I think that was really helpful. The course was great, but I think it was also a bit of a permission step for me to sort of say, yes, I'm investing in this and it's something that I really want to do, taking it kind of seriously. And that was helpful just from an initial structure and some sort of tips around how to approach a story. But it was really just writing and writing and redrafting and sitting back and changing and editing. And then, of course, once I shared it and got professional feedback from my agent, that was a whole different ballgame too. You know, there was so many things she pointed out that I just hadn't thought of. But I think the story she felt very strongly about from the start. So I had as well. So I kind of knew that there was something working with the character and the town and the story and the plot and sort of the journey that everyone was on. So that kept me going, I think.
Editors in a way are like tutors, aren't they?
Oh, incredible. I mean,
incredible. I really think
sometimes their name should be on the book.
Because they
very much co-create and certainly co-birth the story with you. It's a different skill. Like I don't know that I would be a very good editor at all.
Yeah.
But then I know I've heard editors say that they have no interest in writing and creating a concept
many don't.
In the book.
It's really interesting. But I agree with you. I mean, usually the authors, because people are lovely and generous, they will acknowledge the editor. But there should be a place, I'd say. I really think that. And particularly in, you know, that the Library of Congress information that you have on each book and how that library categorises it.
I agree.
That's something that should be there. Okay, so I just want to figure out then, how is it that you work full time and that you write? Are you like not getting much sleep person, or how do you cut out time?
Well, I mean, it has been different for every book. So I have worked the whole time that I've been a writer in some capacity, I did take that time off to finish The Dark Lake that I mentioned. I had that long service leave gift, which was, I mean, I wrote like I was on fire. It was such an amazing, you know, opportunity. But since then, it's just been a big mix of different things. Like I have done weekends. I used to get up early on Saturdays and write. I sort of would write when the kids were at soccer in the car, like snatches of time. I think I've become less good at doing it in such a sort of ramshackle way. I now much prefer what I kind of call binge writing, where I think, and then just find however many hours I can negotiate to have away from everybody and just go into a little writing cave and just write for hours and hours and hours and try and get as many words down as I can. I find that more effective these days than the sort of half an hour here, half an hour there. I just can't get into the story in a way that is sort of useful. So it's sort of changed a little bit. I am more tired now. Like I used to be able to stay up really late and write, and now I just fall asleep. So that's kind of diminished my writing opportunity. But each book's been different, slightly different circumstances, slightly different life sort of arrangement. So, I mean, lockdown for me was actually a good writing time. I wrote a lot during lockdown, and that was for me quite productive. But, you know, at the same time, there was lots of online meetings during the day, homeschooling the kids 3 days a week. Like it was a jumble of a time. I think writing then became sort of almost like a treat to sort of look forward to at the end of the day, even if it was just an hour or two. So every time's been different, but I don't sort of see it as, it's a different kind of work. So it doesn't feel like more work. I don't sort of open my laptop and feel, oh gosh, I'm back at work. It is quite different. It's still hard. There's still times where I would prefer to not be doing it. Sometimes I find I look forward to it and then I actually start doing it and I really don't want to be doing it, which is that weird relationship that I guess we have with art. But on balance, I've sort of said to people before, the desire to finish a book and have a story complete is so powerful that it does carry me through those hours that feel tedious. So the goal kind of is worth the effort. So I guess as long as that's the case, hopefully I'll manage to sort of find time to write.
Well, I think if you're up to book four, I think you've got some kind of, even though each one's not the same, but you're into some kind of rhythm. Do you know, it's really interesting when you said that you didn't tell anyone initially. It's so funny because I'm driven as, like, if I'm going to do a project, I have to tell people I'm doing the project because that then makes me answerable.
Accountable, yeah.
And also people say, oh, where is it? So, so that really does, it's a driver for me. But I know for a lot of people it's not. But what happened, like, let's say in the workplace when people discovered that, whoa, Sarah's written a book?
I think to your point, I was quite secretive until I think I felt ready to sort of publicly declare that I was pursuing this crazy thing. And I think the reason why I was secretive initially was that I didn't want it on the record. Like I didn't want to lay out this goal and then sort of have everyone go, oh, she didn't end up doing anything about that. So I think once I reached the tipping point of getting halfway, that was when I started to say to people, look, I've actually started writing a book. And I think it was a confidence thing that I felt I might actually finish this book. And I remember when I quit my job, which was a big deal because I'd been there for such a long time and loved the place so much. I did say then I'm going to take some time, finish this book I'm writing, and then, you know, who knows. And I think a few people were like, oh, she's really lost it. Like, she's going to write a book. That's weird.
If I was there when you were saying that, I'd be like, oh, yeah, good luck with that.
I think they were sort of like, you don't have to lie. If you don't want to be here anymore, you can just say you want to go. And I was like, no, I'm actually writing a book.
But also it's like writing a book. Oh, well, yeah, let's see how that goes.
Exactly. I think it did make me sound a bit nuts. I guess, you know, yeah, in the end it was great to sort of a year later go, no, it's been published. Someone's going to publish it. So, I mean, look, I think broadly people were really excited for me and happy for me, perhaps a little bit sort of perplexed by the whole thing, because I think especially crime, I know a few people along the way have kind of gone, like a true crime, what? And I'm like, no, just like a made up, you know, crime story. And they're kind of like, oh, I didn't know you were into that. And I'm like, well, I'm not really into it. That's just what I wrote. So I think it did sort of come from left field perhaps a little bit, but Yeah, I think, you know, most people I work with are very, very creative, and I think just really respect ideas and stories and art in any form. So they're really excited about the books, and I keep it pretty separate from work. Like, it's got nothing to do with my job. There's really no overlap, and when I'm at work, I'm at work. But yeah, it's been nice to have so many people read the books and enjoy them, and, you know, want to talk about how I do it and what. Where I get ideas from and all that sort of thing. So I'm always happy to talk about that.
Do you know, I always find there is, and you probably do too, because and you probably experience this firsthand, like you go to a dinner, for instance, and work for an advertising agency and people say, okay, and then talk to the next person. However, if you say you're a writer, they'll stay on you.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
Don't you think? I find that even
quite mysterious. Definitely. And I think especially having written a series, people are very, I find, particularly interested in how you keep a character going, and they want to sort of understand, do I like her? Do I feel like she's real? What relationship do I have with her? So there's definitely a specific curiosity when it comes to the main character of my detective series, and then just all of the mystery around how does it work with writing and how did the royalties work and do you have a say in this and that, and you know, it's definitely quite a mysterious industry, I think. Mm-mm. So people are wanting, very curious.
I think the writing, and also, I mean, you know, I don't write at all, but you know, I remember going to a birthday a few years ago, well, I don't know, 10, 15 years ago now, and it was a bunch of lawyers. Every single person at the table was a solicitor except me. Kept thinking, I walked into that thinking, I'm going to be so boring. Like, you know, like I'm here at 1 hour.
No. Yeah.
Well,
yeah, you would have been the most interesting.
I couldn't, you know, there were so many questions. I felt like that I was recording a Q&A, you know. There was such a fascination with working in the book industry.
I think it's just too, there's books everywhere, but people don't often sort of unpack beyond that they know what a book is. And they sort of, I think once they've got this little gate into the world, they really do want to understand how it all works. So, I think it definitely sparks a lot of conversation.
And that's what makes this podcast so successful. People love the insight. Yeah. Winning the Ned Kelly Award and the David Award, it's huge.
I honestly just couldn't believe it. The whole year was crazy. And I do, you know, have some really, really vivid memories that I'm sure will last me my lifetime of sort of phone calls and moments that just seemed completely surreal and insane, you know, off the back of kind of getting an agent and then her putting it out to the publishing industry, having people be interested, having someone sign it on. Then there was the second book deal that came through very quickly. There was chats about, you know, film rights. And then there was sort of only a few months later talk about being shortlisted for these awards. I mean, I hadn't even thought beyond hoping to get it published. You know, that was the only goal that I had. And it's funny, I've heard people talk before about, you know, you unlock one goal and then you do suddenly sort of forget that and you're onto something else and then the next book becomes your focus. And it's true, you do sort of progress through goals. But, I mean, I will never forget the feeling of sort of, I don't know, validation is, I guess, the best way to describe it, but just almost just personal satisfaction of like having finished something and then having someone want to publish it is still the most purest sort of satisfaction I've kind of ever, I think.
I think, and I haven't gotten beyond writing an email, but the fact that somebody reads it and it brings them great interest and joy and, you know, that whole idea, because, you know, stories, as you said earlier, is so vital in our lives. And, you know, because often authors, like, you know, thank us, Better Reading, so much for helping them out. But really, I mean, and I say this all the time, no, we're thanking you for the story. We love the story. My community loves the story.
It is important not to take it for granted, because I think it is easy to sort of, I was at an event the other night actually, and I was holding a copy of my new book, and I just had that moment where someone said to me, oh, how does it feel to sort of, you know, you must be so special when you first received the book. And I said, you know what, it really is. Mm-hmm. Like, there is something about that moment in particular where you first kind of see it. Mm-hmm. And it is special. And I do have to sort of remind myself that it's so much work contained in a way that you can hold it in your hand or, you know, on a file or whatever. But, yeah, it is special. And I do want to sort of make sure I never take that for granted, because it's, it's what it's all about, all of those hours and all of that time. That's the moment that matters, yeah.
All right. Well, Sarah, thank you so much for your time today. The new book is called Body of Lies. What can I say? Keep it up.
No, thank you. Thanks so much for having me.
If you'd like more information about Better Eating, follow us on Facebook or visit bettereating.com.au.
This podcast is proudly sponsored by Belinda Audio. Belinda audiobooks are available on CD and MP3 from online booksellers and bookshops everywhere, or you can download from Audible, Google Play, or the iBookstore. We've also created our own app called BorrowBox that's available from both the App Store and Google Play. All you need to do to get it working is to download the app, join your local public library, and you'll gain access to the world's best collection of ebooks and e-audiobooks available for you to loan on your phone or your personal device. Belinda, we're here to enable you to escape, imagine, grow, and be inspired through the power of storytelling. Belinda Audiobooks. Anywhere, everywhere.
Deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Traffic jams, tailgating, pile-ups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit EnergyCitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.
If you enjoyed this podcast, leave us a review and check out the other podcasts on the Better Reading Network.